Welcome to the Center of Everywhere podcast, where we explore stories of rural Minnesotans who are making a difference in their communities. Rural isn't in the middle of nowhere. It is in the center of everywhere.
Welcome to the Center of Everywhere podcast. I'm Kelly Ash, senior researcher at the Center for Rural Policy and Development. We are a private, nonpartisan, nonprofit organization based in rural Minnesota, where we are dedicated to providing data-driven research on rural issues to help our policymakers make more informed decisions affecting the rural people and places of our state. Over the last 5 months, I've had the privilege of sitting on an advisory committee for an honors research project taken on by Ava Weber, a student at the University of Minnesota Morse. Her research project explored the relationship between the Minnesota education formula for our K-12 schools throughout the state and immigrant and refugee populations in rural Minnesota, essentially how do these two things kind of mingle together and either provide advantages or disadvantages in the financial situation that these school districts are in. I was so impressed by her research that I wanted to have her on our show and give her an opportunity to talk about it. So Ava, thanks for coming on and being a part of this. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
So first of all, congratulations. You graduated last Saturday. Did you participate in the ceremony? Everything went well?
I did. Yep. Everything went well.
So tell everybody, what was your major?
I majored in economics and then business and management.
Okay, great. And you grew up where?
Fergus Falls.
And what made you decide to go to the University of Minnesota Morse?
It was close to home and had some good scholarship opportunities. I'm the oldest of 8 kids, so I wanted to stay close to my family.
Yeah. Wow. That's a lot of kids. Mm-hmm. You Catholic?
Nope.
Oh, okay. That's usually what the thing is, right?
Yeah.
Well, congratulations. And we'll talk a little bit about what you're doing next on your next little journey. But first, you know, we're not going to let you just leave college with a straight cut on Saturday. We want to go back and dive into some of the research you looked at. Again, I was just really impressed with such an interesting research question. Maybe if you wouldn't mind providing the audience just like what was kind of your thesis question? And then what does that mean kind of in more layman's terms, right? So you're writing this, just so everybody knows, at the University of Minnesota Morris, people can take on an honors project, essentially being able to graduate with honors. You complete this project and it has faculty advisors. And it's essentially kind of a class on the side of everything else that you have to do to graduate. So talk us through, what was your thesis?
Sure. So my project was focused on the implications of immigrant students on the financial sustainability of rural Minnesota school districts. So I looked at the Minnesota general education revenue formula as a whole and kind of the marginal cost versus marginal revenue for that, and then specifically the English learner component and how much extra revenue that that gives the school districts for each English learner student versus the costs associated with educating those students.
Yeah. And so to kind of catch our listeners up to speed, if you're not familiar with the Minnesota education formula, do you remember, Ava, how many components of the education formula are there?
There are 14.
Yeah, 14 different components, anywhere from, you know, helping school districts maintain their facilities to giving extra money for any programs that might be kind of after school, like normal hours, all the way to if you have a number of English learners in your school, you get some extra funding as well. So you were kind of looking at one component and kind of how that relationship combines with an increase in immigrant and refugee populations. Now, I know you went through data analysis and interviews, but step us through. You didn't look at every single school. You kind of did a sample of school districts across the state. Do you want to talk us through kind of how you ended up analyzing the school districts that you did?
Yeah. So I chose 10 different school districts from 10 different rural Minnesota counties. And to find those, I looked at the Minnesota Department of Education has a lot of data. And so I looked at district enrollment, English learner count, and I arranged those based on the percent of English learners within the school. And I only looked at school districts outside of the 7-county metro, and I didn't want to double up in counties. And then I also didn't look at charter schools because those have a different funding formula. So then I just came up with the top 10 different districts, and I did include Morris and Pelican Rapids just for a personal connection to those districts. And then from there, I I just looked at language spoken at home and how many different languages are spoken in those school districts and started to pull some data together.
Yeah, and you were looking at kind of the historical funding, so the historical enrollment patterns, as well as their relationship then to the funding formula and how that might have increased or decreased depending on these populations coming into the school districts. A little bit about the school districts. Do you remember I remember there being like a really nice variety of smaller rural school districts with a few that might be considered economic center more. I think Worthington was one, correct? That's a little bit bigger of a school district. What were some of those, and what did that look like in terms of like size of enrollment?
Sure. So I can just list off the districts that I had. Butterfield, Odin, Worthington, Long Prairie, Gray Eagle, Wilmer, Faribault, Austin, Lacaparla, Westbrook, Walnut Grove, Pelican Rapids, and then Morris area.
Yeah, cool. That's a really nice selection. Almost all of them on the western side of the state, almost all of them in the southern half of the state, typically where we see immigrant refugee populations. Pelican Rapids kind of being that one that's a little bit outside, are one of the more northern school districts. That one I find really fascinating as well. So got this methodology. Before you got there, why did you choose this topic, or what kind of drove you to take a look at this?
Sure. So I'm interested in going into economic development and community development, more specifically for rural areas. And so I came in to talk to my advisor, Arne Kildegard, about what kind of project this might be. And I wanted to look at something related to the field and something related to demographics. And I guess it skips ahead a little bit, but my plan is to stay in Stevens County. And this is a very relevant topic to Stevens County. So Arna kind of helped me come up with this as a way to combine my interests.
Yeah, no, that's great. Always excited to hear people. I grew up in Stevens County. I grew up in Hancock, so I'd have some personal connections there as well. So I guess to get to the meat of the discussion, let's talk about your results. What do you feel like was the kind of top thing that you learned and people will find interesting related to your research?
Sure. So I guess I looked at, like I said, for the general education revenue formula, marginal cost versus marginal revenue. So I talked to four superintendents from school districts that I looked at, and they just based on what they said, marginal revenue for the general education formula is greater than marginal cost per student. They would say that's decreasing over time, that gap is closing. But it does still cover their expenses. But then for the English learner component, the revenue provided by the state is not enough to fund their necessary programming. So they're supplementing these programs with other funding sources. So then maybe other buckets of the general education formula, or they're increasing their operating levies, but they have to increase that. And a couple things that kind of go with that is in the formula, English learners are not weighted by grade level like the other components. So then their funding may not accurately represent the varying costs associated with educating those students. And then EL revenue formula, that fails to take into account the number of languages spoken within the district. So some of these districts have a lot more languages spoken than others. So you're obviously going to need more resources if you have more languages.
Yeah, so it's treating all English learners as if it's the same English learner when that's not the case, right?
Right.
Yeah. So you had two pieces to this. You did data analysis just to kind of look at trends, and then you interviewed superintendents to kind of confirm, like, okay, on the data side, we see increasing revenue to these school districts through that English learner component. As well as in some cases, it was really interesting, and maybe dig into this a little bit. Looking at enrollment patterns across all these districts, obviously, large percentage of them were English learners. Demographically, a lot of them were higher percentages of immigrant refugee students, or of immigrant refugee families, I should say. But that didn't always mean increasing enrollment, correct? Like some of these school districts, yeah, they saw an increase in these people, but that was holding them steady because otherwise they would have been seeing declines in enrollment. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. If you look at the graph that I made, I mean, those lines are pretty flat, and some of them are even still dipping down,
Yeah.
despite the increase in enrollment from immigrant
Yeah.
students.
So essentially looking at these populations as like keeping them steady, plus the little, so they get the revenue fund for having that body in the school district, right? So that keeps them good financially, but then they get this other chunk of money on top of that for English learners. Now, when you went over to talk to superintendents, that was the main crux of your research, was debating like, is this extra money enough? Is it making up enough of the extra costs that it takes to educate these students? Largely, they said yes, but it's not as much as it used to be. It's getting tougher. And just the general formula in general isn't really meeting the costs associated with it. So they're kind of having to just grapple with these different buckets to pay for different things. Am I explaining that correctly?
Yeah, I mean they have more than enough. Well, the extra money that they receive per general student is enough to cover those expenses. But then the extra costs associated with an English learner student, they're not receiving enough extra funding for those students.
Oh, they're not.
They're
Okay,
not. So
interesting.
I mean they're getting more revenue from English learner students just because they're another body, another student enrolled, and so they get
Yeah.
that extra general education revenue, but then the marginal revenue for being an English learner is not enough.
And their argument is, one, we have English learners as an aggregate speaking a lot of different languages. So to be able to teach them English is going to require different types of backgrounds of their teachers to help communicate that, as well as the English learner funds doesn't give more money to students that might be in, let's say, kindergarten, first grade, second grade, versus other grades, like the general education component does already, right? Like, so the basic education formula, I think, gives more money to different grades depending on, just because there's this idea that it costs more to educate at certain grade levels than others, correct? Was there anything else that was kind of interesting to you that maybe, your thesis came out and essentially the data kind of concluded that your kind of hypothesis was correct? Was there anything else surprising about your research?
I guess something interesting is just getting a chance to talk to these superintendents and hearing about some of the changes they've made within the district, or maybe accommodations, things that would make students of other coming from other cultures and religions and places feel more welcome, and try to get the community to come together as a whole. So that was interesting to hear. Everything from, accommodations with prayer times or serving different foods in the cafeteria, or one school district even talked about sending lunches home with students that are fasting during Ramadan so that they have something to eat in the evenings. So that was pretty interesting.
Yeah. I know as a committee, when we all met and discussed your research with you, we kind of started talking about a broader set of issues related to all of this. Obviously, with workforce shortages and, the ongoing probably population declines that we're going to see over the next 10, 20, 30 years in our rural areas, we need to look at immigrant and refugee populations as a source of population, workforce, all that above, and how the school district really does play a role, a primary role in making sure these people are treated well, making sure they like their community, are welcoming, and hopefully stay. Or if they do leave for college or something like that, maybe they'll come back, right? Like, the school district has to play so many roles, not just educating these students, it's also providing them a sense of community. Is that something you felt like the superintendents took pretty seriously?
Yeah, I would definitely say that. And several of them talked about workforce and how important immigrant people coming in and working is to their community, and I guess with population decline, they also mentioned that the people coming from other countries, they're the ones that are still having a lot of kids. So
Yeah.
that's pretty important for district sustainability.
Absolutely. Yep. Birth rates are higher. Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, so done with this research. You're all graduated. You wanted to stay in Stevens County. Sounds like you found success. Do you want to tell folks what's your plans now?
Sure. So I got a job with the Stevens County Economic Improvement Commission. So I'm sticking around and I get to do exactly what I want to do, which is rural economic development.
Yeah, that's great. Well, congratulations, Ava, and
Thank you.
congratulations on all this research. Is there, I know the University of Minnesota Morris has the, or the University of Minnesota as a whole has the Digital Commons
Yeah.
library. Will your report be posted there?
Yes, it's in the digital well. Yep.
It's already there.
Yep.
Okay, sounds good. So for anyone listening to this, you can go to the Digital Well. I think if you Google Digital Well, University of Minnesota Morris, you'll go to their library and you can search for all kinds of reports. What's the name of your report?
It is the impact of immigration on resource allocation in Minnesota school districts.
There you go. And we'll have a link to it on our website on this podcast episode as well, so people can go check it out. Ava, thank you so much for joining us. Thanks for the research you do. Congratulations. And I'm looking forward to, I'm assuming I'm going to be running into you in the future. Just we're going to be having similar careers. So
Yeah, I
looking
hope
forward
so.
to
All right, well, thank you for having me on.
You've been listening to the Center of Everywhere podcast, where we explore stories of rural Minnesotans who are making a difference in their communities. Rural isn't in the middle of nowhere. It is in the center of everywhere.